First, I would wish to thank the organizer for inviting me for giving this talk. Okay. Now, the first part, let me just talk about a little bit about the motif to study the earthquake theory. Actually, I went to the Professor Canning's class yesterday, he mentioned a challenge open problem. Which basically is the renormalization theory. In general, criticalities. Basically, here is the book. I think everybody knows this open problem. We have the unimodal. Here I mean the renormalization theory. Basically, I mean two problems, rigidity and the universality. So we have the unimodal map is the x goes to absolute value of x raised to the alpha power plus a parameter. I is a real parameter. Alpha is a fixed real number bigger than 1. So that's in the unimodal case, and in the circle case has the same problem. You have a critical point, and around this critical point locally x goes to the sine x absolute value to the alpha plus. So the rigidity, the convergence in for the renormalizations, then you have the scaling functions for the counterset attractor here so far. So we know this problem conceptually solved for the case for n for the alpha equal to 2n for the unimodal case. Alpha equal to 3 for the circle case. And here, everybody, this work is due to the Sullivan, McMillan, Lubitsch. And this work due to the DeFerrio and Yampolsky. Okay, so let me just focus on the unimodal case. So basically, in the unimodal case, we have the renormalization operator. Which has a hyperbolic structure. You have a stable manifold. This is the co-dimension one stable manifold. Here is the unstable manifold. So this part, this direction is the Sullivan McMillan, unstable direction is due to the Lubitsch. So let's come to this stable manifold. So there's the first question is how to describe the stable manifold. So what do we have here? in the denormalization, you first get, you have seen this picture. So basically, you have a space of the polynomial, quadratic-like map. It's just the focus on the case in alpha equal to 2. So we have a quadratic-like map. That's the space. Then in this space, basically, there are they are quite a conformal conjugate to each other, and plus no invariant line bundle on the Julia set. So here actually we have a word is called a hybrid conjugate. Okay, so that's a space we focus on, then quotient a equivalence condition, then we have a Tashimir space. Okay, in general, the Tashimir space is a complex Wallenheim manifold. So then, we have a space that you can consider. In the Tashimir theory, actually, there's another interesting principle is called the contraction principle. So the contraction principle, it's very it's similar to the convergence for the renormalization operator. So then all the whole business becomes of reduced to an important work on the complex bounds. So the complex bounds implies this hybrid conjugacy. Not only quasi-conformal conjugate, also no invariant line bound at the Julia set. Also, we are given the contraction principle. So then we have the convergence. Of the renormalization operator. On this space. Okay, so now here, what we have, basically it's the quasi-conformal conjugacy, is the quasi-conformal mapping. So you have, the system has the complex analytical extension into the complex plane, then you have the quasi-conformal conjugacy, then the usually two to develop the Tashimir space can be put in to set up the Wallenheim manifold structure for the space. Okay, but now if alpha is not integer, then so the general case is alpha bigger than 1, alpha not equal to 2. So then, on the map, clearly in both cases, the system has no complex analytic extension into the complex plane. So this is the soul. Actually, I have to mention the soul again. Actually, it is his idea. His idea to develop the whole idea is to develop real Hashimoto theory, which means can you set up a build up a Hashimoto space without using the quasi-conformal mappings, without using the measurable mapping, Lehmann mapping theorem, the mu, Bachmann differential equation, coefficients, and so on. So, and again, the more specifically, he suggested to develop the real Hashimoto space of the circle diffeomorphisms. Different orders. Okay, so then what is the good tool to develop such real Hashimoto space is the Thurston's earthquake theory. Okay, could you say, I will go specifically go to the question later. It's of different types, of different types. Okay. Yeah. You mean to, okay, sorry for that, not connect. Different types. So, but earthquake theory, it's a very interesting theory, but it is not well developed itself. You can find a lot of interesting analytic questions with respect to the earthquake theory by itself. but sometimes it is very useful. One example is the Nielsen's realization theory. By using the earthquake theory, the Nielsen's realization problem has a solution. Okay, so basically that's my motivation. I have been working in earthquake theory for quite a while. I got some analytically results in the theory, but I haven't got much applications in dynamic systems yet. But at the end of today's talk, I will explain only one application. It's a very simple application, but I like to bring it out. Okay, so now let's come to the earthquake theory. So, firstly, it's the earthquake maps. Let me just give a very simple example, then go and give the definition. The definition for the earthquake maps are quite long, but by understanding this example, it's quite easy to follow the definition. So in this case, we have up half plane, we have the imaginary x. I will introduce a map defined piecewisely. So this piece is the identity map, and this piece, this quarter, is the z goes to lambda z. Lambda is a real number bigger than 1. It's, let me see, an elementary earthquake. On this line is the fault line. You can define the identity on this line, or you can define this hyperbolic Möbius transformation on this line, or you can define it by itself, but we need to require lambda tilde is the between the 1 and the lambda. So what we will see, if you're standing on this piece, look at the points Under the action of this piecewisely defined map, you see all the points moving to your left. So this is an elementally left earthquake. So it doesn't matter which, even you stand, if you're standing on this fault line, you still see that the points on, in front of you moving to the left. If you turn it over, now you see the points move to your left too. So it's independent where you stand. Where you stand, you can stand here, you can stand on this fault line, or you can stand on this piece. You will always see the points moving to your left. So this is very important. So you make the points moving in the same direction. Okay. So this one is an elementally left earthquake. So then, we can start to define earthquake maps as follows. So we have, first we have a lamination so what's the lamination basically? It's a geodetic lamination. You have, now I take the unit disk as the hyperbolic plane, so you can draw, yes. If this elementally earthquake, if you make a conjugate to the unit disk, then you have, this is the geodesics in the hyperbolic magic, and they divide the hyperbolic plane into two pieces, and you can also have defined earthquake map on the disk. So that's the convenience. So for the convenience, I describe the earthquake map on the disk. Okay. So now you have a lamination. The lamination could be it could be finite. Just in this case, it's a discrete case. Yeah. And also, it doesn't have to be discrete case. You can have a piece of the hyperbolic plane laminated by all the leaves down. Okay, that's also a lamination. So now we have some concepts. So these called the leaves. That's called the gaps. And these together we call it stratum. Okay, so the stratum is either leaf or a gap. And also there's another condition, which is a technical condition which we need. It's the locus of this lamination is a closed locus of L is a closed subset of the hyperbolic plane. This one actually it's important to introduce the earthquake measure in a moment. Okay, so that's first we need a lamination. Then second part to define earthquake is a collection. It is a collection of the Mobius transformation. So we have the E. This is a collection of the Mobius transformation. From the hyperbolic plane onto itself. In other words, if you say each one is the isometry on the hyperbolic plane. So then, that's just the collection, it's a piecewise, but the important thing is to the direction. We want all the points to move in the same direction. So we need to introduce a couple of question. So this is the collection of Mobius transformation restricted on stratum. So then this E, the collection of the Mobius transformation and the lamination, is a left earthquake if and quite a few conditions need to. First, E as a map is the 1-to-1 and onto. But of course, most likely it's not continuous. Not continuous. Yeah, I forgot to mention, even in this simple earthquake, you will see the points here. Suppose you make this lambda tilde is also equal to lambda. Here the points stays where they are. Here the points move up by the lambda. So along this line, I call it the fault line, along this line, the map is not continuous. But interesting is, if you look at this map, restricted on the boundary R, it's still a continuous map. So only not continuous on the hyperbolic plane, but on the boundary, it is still a continuous map. Okay. Yes, but in this case, if the lamination is foliated, it's very complicated. Yeah. Okay. Now the set. Yes. Yes, around the fault line. If the lamination consists of only finitely many leaves, that genetics, then it is only that. Okay, so now the second part is the for each one, the second condition is for each stratum, A, E, restriction on A is equal to a Mobius transformation, restriction on A. But where this Mobius transformation, actually I said it already over there, but I want to point. This Mobius transformation is from the onto. It's isometric. Okay? Then the third condition is the most important thing, is for any two stratum, AB, it doesn't matter either leaf or you can take two leaves, you can take one is the leaf, the other one is the gap, that's fine. For it, now we have the comparison map is defined, we have the A and the B. Yeah, I would have to make sure. Okay. So this comparison map, first the condition for this comparison map again, I would like to explain what does it mean. Here, you do the composition. You just think of this is the Mobius transformation defined on the whole hyperbolic plane. That's the Mobius transformation defined on the whole hyperbolic plane. Take the composition. So this has to be a hyperbolic. That's the condition comes out. This composition is a hyperbolic Mobius transformation. That's the first condition. Second condition, we want the hyperbolic Mobius transformation has the axis. The axis of this comparison map weakly separates A from B. Look, there's one case, for example, if you take A is here, B is here, then the axis of the comparison map has to be this genetics. Or even what do we mean weakly separated? If you take this leaf as the B, so then the axis for the comparison map has to be itself. So it's not, that's called weakly. The third condition, further condition, we have the more. So this comparison map AB translates to the left as viewed on A. So in another word, if you're standing on A, look at the where the points go under the B or move to your left. This map. Yes. Yeah. No, it's okay. It's which basically you're standing on A, you see the map move to, yeah. That's okay. It's viewed on A is good enough. Yeah. It moves everything too, but if you're just standing on A, as viewed. Yeah. You just only need to look at the points on B moving to your left, as viewed on A. Yes. Okay? Just let me save that word. Okay, so that's earthquake map. So now, what is the so interesting result? The interesting result is the Thurston's theorem. So let me first thing, it's easy to see. This is very easy to see. If I mean earthquake map, means on either a left or right. You can define everything the same except the last word over there. Everything moved to your right, then you define right earthquake. And these two are very different. I will make a comment later. So now, first fact, it's very easy to see each earthquake map extends to a circle homeomorphism on the boundary. Actually, it's the orientation preserving. Circle homeo on the boundary S1. Okay. Now the surprising result is the Thurston's theorem. Every orientation circle homeo can be viewed as the extension of a left or right earthquake map. Okay. So in other words, I think the idea actually this was I was also told by this comment by Sullivan. Basically, you have the piecewise Mobius maps approximating a circle orientation preserving homeomorphism, and you take the limit, you get lamination, you get earthquake. Yeah. So okay. So now. Every orientation. So now let me just introduce a little bit of notation for the convenience of the following talk. So we have. It's the fix. If I mean the left, means the always left.
When you
yes.
if you create the map like that way, so you get either...
Either left or right. Yeah. And also, yeah, this seems to show you. Also, let me make just a remark here. Yeah, let me give the... So we will say, so now we have a circle. This is the circle, circle homeo F. Now you have the, yes?
You can do any homomorphism with left earthquake.
Yes. Then you can all do with the right earthquake. Yeah. No. Okay, so yeah, just let it... Then you know, it's messy. If you use it both sometimes, it's messy. So you have the E, L, yeah? And here, let me just use this. That's the earthquake representation for the circle homeomorphism with that. So now what is the remark, what I want to make? Just the given F, the laminations to the left earthquake and the right earthquake are very, very different. Okay, it's very different. The laminations for the left or right earthquake representation. Yeah, lamination is uniquely defined. Thank you. Yes, and follow the Misha's comment. The lamination is uniquely defined, but the earthquake map is not uniquely defined. Why? Around the fault line, you can change that lambda tilde. Make it any lambda tilde in between. You get the earthquake with the same boundary. Homeomorphism. Lamination is unique. This is important because I'm ready to introduce the earthquake measure. Yeah? Yes, okay, you want me to do that? Okay, I do it. I say it. This one, if only if that's it's completed the result. The next part is with respect to the earthquake measure. You have earthquake map produce earthquake measure, but it's not true every measure here can be produced by earthquake map. That's the question related to the earthquake measure. Okay. Actually I need this example. Okay, so now let me start to introduce the earthquake measure. That's the interesting item. Why it is an interesting item, it corresponds to the Bertram differential coefficient for the quasi-conformal maps. Okay, for the curve. So now, just again, let's come back to this elementary earthquake. Again, what we will see, what is the measure I'm going to put on this fault line? I will put if I use the special terminology, it's called translation length for the comparison map. But anyway, for this case, what do we do? If you take the comparison map between these two, what is the translation length? Is the log of lambda. Okay, so then also this log of lambda, if you put the C as another stratum in between, you can add the translation length between the AC with the translation length between the BC. Between the AC is the log of lambda tilde, between the BC, it is the log of the lambda over lambda tilde. So they are the same. So we decided to put what's the weight for this, what's the measure for this leaf is the log of lambda. So now we have the lamination. Lamination could be very complicated. Actually, this is the difficult because you don't know there are algorithms to visualize how the lamination looks like, but it doesn't really help much in the argument. So now this is, you could have anywhere. But suppose, how do we define a measure for the so in this case, in the elementary case, we put the weight is equal to log lambda. Yes? Now, if it's a lamination, if it's just a finite many leaves, it's quite easy to do. You're just adding up. So you have the beta. So what is the measure of sigma? You just the sum the translation length of the comparison maps around the leaves intersecting beta. So that's the measure. Okay, so if the lamination is finite lamination, not much to do. You just add the weight together. But if the lamination is a foliated space, then you need to consider the partitions of that, and there is a little bit of work to do. But the philosophy of the guideline over there, basically, it's the outer measure, it corresponds to the outer measure for the Lebesgue measure when we define the Lebesgue measure. Okay, so then we get a measure sigma with support on the lamination. This is a Borel measure. Okay, the Borel measure. So we start a circle homeomorphism. We get an earthquake representation. Then we get earthquake measure. Support on the lamination. So that is called earthquake measure. Okay. So the earthquake measure. Now the remark which the Andrew tried to led me to make is not every Borel measure can be induced by earthquake maps. So, but anyway, let me quickly, I'm running out. So, just for this earthquake measure, we can define the Thurston norm. What's the Thurston norm of the sigma? You just take the soup of the sigma of beta, but we need a restriction on the length of the beta. The hyperbolic length of beta less than or equal to 1. Okay. So now we have another nice theorem. I think it's all still due to Thurston, but the proofs are not due to him. Sorry. So basically, F is quasi-symmetric if only if sigma of F is finite. It's very neat. I think this direction probably Thurston has the proof already. He didn't. But this direction actually recently we have three proofs are produced. The first proof is given by the Gardiner, me, and Luckett. In this one, we did use the ordinary differential equations of the earthquake curves. There are other two more proofs. The second proof is due to the Sarik. He used holomorphic motions. Actually, there is interesting in his work. His interesting point of his work is not to get this result, is to have a complex curve. So it's either you have a sigma, we have this sigma, you can multiply by T, you get a T sigma, then you produce the earthquake maps corresponding to the T sigma, then you have a curve of the homeomorphism on the boundary, and so on. But his work actually not only consider T is a real parameter, also consider T is a complex parameter. Then the bending also comes in. So you use the holomorphic motion, the image of the circle becomes the quasi-circle in the complex plane. But anyway, and there's another very elementary proof, which I produced a couple of years ago. I will use this the technique here to actually get a better result. So we have okay, so now so far we have the quasi-symmetric maps is equivalent to the Thurston norm is finite. So then we can go on further to think how to quantify the quasi-symmetry. So we can use the cross-racial distortion. Okay, so now in the for the definition for the quasi-symmetry, you only need a symmetric triple. But for the cross-racial distortion, we are using four points. So let me quickly. So you have picked the four points, A, B, C, D, counterclockwise. We have a quadruple with the Q, A, B, C, D. Now, the cross ratio we are using, CQ, we use, if we think of the length here is the left, the middle, right, that's the T. So basically, is the LR over MT. So precisely, you can plug in the difference for the B minus A, D minus C, and C minus D, D minus A. So now you have a map F. So you have the image could you pull, and then you have the image F of Q, F of A, F of B, F of C, F of D, and then what is the, we can define the cross ratio distortion norm. Is the sup of the log, we take the cross ratio of the image quadruple, plug in that formula, but not taking the divided by the cross ratio of the, yes, you can take this, but not for all the Q. We are only going to take the supreme with respect to the Q with the cross ratio equal to 1. So I should put it here. Then take the log. Otherwise, I'm getting, okay. So now, if I restrict this one is equal to 1, it is the just the cross ratio for the image quadruple. Why? This is important. Because if you neglect this condition, then this norm is finite, is not equivalent to the quasi-symmetry. With this condition, now you have is finite. It's the fact if only if F is quasi-symmetric. So that's true. If this condition is neglected, that's not true anymore. Okay. So then we got very nice. Now we have two norms, and again, why we introduce this cross ratio norm? Reason is also clearly here because the Thurston's norm for the earthquake map is invariant on the Mobius transformation. So we want to introduce the some norm is also invariant on the Mobius transformation. So then you see the Mobius transformation preserves the cross ratio nicely going through. Now we can compare these two norms. We first got theorem 1. We got sigma norm is less than equal to a constant times the cross ratio norm. This constant is universal. This is already, it's in the contemporary mass. 2002, and then we also tried to study the other direction, but we didn't get the complete result in this paper. We get the partial results for the opposite direction, and I just didn't want to give it up, so. I go on. Then I did find a machinery to estimate the cross ratio through the earthquake map for another C. So we have a nice correlate. We have the Thurston norm and we have the cross ratio norm are equivalent. This one, actually, it is useful, I think. Why is it useful? In the earthquake curve, you multiply it by T sigma. Yes? So you start with F. Now you get the sigma of F, and then you multiply by the T sigma F. Then you get the, going back, get the ET. Then going back, you get F of T. So how do you know the cross ratio of this image map is only depending on the cross ratio norm of F, if you don't have this equivalence. Now, by going to the sigma and multiply by T, it's still equivalent, so basically the cross ratio norm of this one is just T times the cross ratio norm of F. So if you're talking about the earthquake curve, it will help you to control all the maps on the curve in a linear fashion. Okay, so now I have only 5 minutes or 10 minutes left, or 15 minutes. Okay, so well, just give me five. Let me skip that part. You just mention. Give me 5 minutes, please. So now, what do we have? So let me just quickly explain the idea how to control the sigma through the cross ratio distortion. So just look at what we have one leaf in this lamina, and we want to look at to see how does the weight of the L is controlled by the cross ratio distortion. So you can pick up such 4 points, CD. Now, we know the given condition is the cross ratio distortion on ABCD is bounded. Okay, now the earthquake map, as I mentioned, it moves the points to the same direction. So what do I can basically think? So if you just neglect all the weights, forget these weights, what we will see, we only see this is the L part, that's the M part, M is in the denominator, F of L over F of M, F of R, F of T, so M is in the denominator. So if you neglect all the weights here, you only move the points to the left less. Yes? So if this value gets smaller. So in another words, if you neglect everything, this cross ratio only gets smaller. Okay. Even it's smaller. So now we just come to here. Just look at this one leaf. We can, by certain monotonicity, we can forget the actions through other leaves. Now you can easily see if you put the infinitely weight, if the weight on this leaf is too big, it will move these points far enough. It will make the cross ratio to blow up. Okay? So put a big weight here. Big weight means all the points move to your left, then this point C has to move too far away. If you move too far away, what we're getting, you will see the L, all the L is fixed, only M changes a lot, and here the R gets a lot of small, so what we have, this cross ratio distortion gets smaller. So we have in this cross ratio distortion, I think I forgot the absolute value. Okay. So it gets very small, so it blows up. So now I want to mention that little application which in respect to a very old theorem. This is the old theorem. I have checked around the people. I would like to attribute this theorem to somebody, but I seem to be that I still didn't get answer, so let me summarize. So F is a circle diffeomorphism, is the C1 plus bounded variation. So F is the circle diffeomorphism, the logarithm of the derivative has the bounded variation. And in this case, we know the Dandois theorem. This F is a conjugate a rigid notation. So you have a rigid notation F if this is irrational. So that we have the topological conjugate. So now let's just add one more condition. With this notation number F is of bounded type, so then this conjugate, topological conjugate H, becomes quasi-symmetric. So now with the help of the argument here, it's just a one-line proof for that theorem. What do I mean? So you have, this is the rigid notation. Okay, you pick up a point, X, and you look at the closed returns. You have, let me just write down, in this case, just the notation, the closed returns of Qn, and look at the pre-negative n. Because the conjugacy has to preserve the dynamics, so the conjugacy H has to go to the same thing for the F. You have the X, you have the F Q sub n, or F of negative Q sub n. Yes? Okay. Now, you have this is the conjugacy map. H has sigma H, and lamination. So suppose you have a leaf ending, emanating from X. Now you take these 4 points as the quadruple. There's a Dandois inequality basically says that the ratio between these two intervals is bounded from below, bounded from up. By assuming the notation number is bounded type, you can select the returns. Here is the previous one, or here is the previous one again. So now what I mean is by assuming the notation number is of bounded type, we can take this A, B, C, D, these 4 points has the bounded cross ratio distortion. It has bounded cross ratio distortion. This the weight on this line as I by the monotonicity in the earthquake measure. So you can easily to prove that the weight on this line is finite. Okay, but because all the space here, you can thicken this leaf a little bit by a universal constant delta. By thickening this leaf a little bit, you get a neighborhood of that leaf, and by the same argument, you still will be able to prove the measure of this beta is finite. So as soon as you have a little length for the transversal arc, then the certain norm is bounded, and then implies the topological conjugacy is the quasi-symmetric. Thank you for your patience. I think I stop here.
Question? Do you think we studied the mixture between the lesser
50 produces a homeomorphism, and the right pair of 50 produces the same homeomorphism.
I did. Yeah, I have a paper coming up about what's the relation between the laminations for the left and the right for the same circle. Oh, just the last point is, I still don't know, you know, I sort of say the folklore theorem. If some of you knows who I should attribute, it's not the topological conjugacy part. If the quasi-symmetrical conjugacy part, who was the first person observed this statement, I like to attribute. Oh, sure.